You're listening to the Brown Trout and Bridge Beers podcast.
Oh, there it is. Easy.
Hey everyone, it's Carf. You know that guy that constantly ruins Grant and Matt's live streams on Instagram? Yeah, that's me. I'm here to give you three quick tips for winter trout fishing. You should listen to these because I'm kind of an expert. I'm an expert at pretending to be an expert. But really, you should listen to these because I'm kind of a big deal when it comes to fly fishing for trout in the winter. Not really. I catch nothing but trees, rocks, and good times. In all seriousness, these tips will help make your outings much more enjoyable. Tip number one, a good pair of socks. Your feet are important. You're going to be standing in the cold water and your feet will get cold. It just makes sense. I've been wearing the Sims Merino Thermal over-the-calf socks all winter and I've been loving them. I've even used them on some of my upland hunting trips. Talking to Grant about socks, he suggested changing your socks when you get to the river to fish. This way you have a fresh pair on and not the socks you were wearing in the car with the foot defrost blasting hot air on your feet, making them all sweaty. Tip number two, hand warmers. I mean, it's just kind of a given. You need your fingers to tie knots. If they become frozen or numb, you're going to drop flies in the water or on the ground. You also might not even be able to tie the knot needed because you can't feel your fingers. So, bring hand warmers. Tip number three, make sure you have a good winter hat. As human beings, we lose roughly 10% of our body heat through our heads. I read that on Google. It doesn't sound like a lot, but I sure don't want to lose any body heat while standing outside in the freezing cold. Make sure you have a good winter beanie. Not only will it keep you from losing that 10% of body heat, it will keep your ears from turning into icicles and falling off your head. If you're in the market for heat-containing fashion, Bob Mitchell's Fly Shop and 10 and 2 Co. have some stylish offerings that you should consider. Well, those are my three tips for winter trout fishing. Now, go out there and catch more rocks than me. I dare you. Bye.
Don't open that door.
You're right by the door. Do you need to go back in the closet?
No. When the sock's on, you don't knock.
Well, that seems like a good as place as any to kick off another episode of Brown Trout and Bridge Beers. Unfortunately, we're doing another Zoom episode. And even worse than that, I don't know if you guys listened to our last episode, but we had Carf give us kind of a gift list of, you know, for you guys coming up with the Christmas things. Somehow he's still on the podcast from that.
Yeah,
with us right now, Justin Carfidnini.
Hi,
how are you, sir?
I'm doing well.
Good. Good. Thanks for joining us today. We've also got two other guys with us because why not? We're on Zoom. We can do whatever we want. We've got Chris Dochel.
Is that Dochel?
Dockle, thank you. And Micah Kreider.
Nailed it.
And Micah's been with us on the podcast once before, should have been twice, but I'll blame Matt because, hey, Matt's not here either. So, Chris, why don't you give us a quick introduction to who you are, where you're from, who your favorite boy band is?
Favorite boy band? Oof. Yeah. So, I'm Chris. I live in Hudson, Wisconsin, hailing from parts of Minnesota. Favorite boy band? Oh man, maybe 98 Degrees. Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. You know, I'll go something a little less low key than the main three, I guess. I don't know.
That's fair. No, I'll take that. I'll take that. And Micah, why don't you give us a quick refresher? Who we are, where you're from.
Yeah, my name is Micah. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, who's your favorite not boy band?
All right. No. Sounds good. So yeah, my name is Micah. I live in South St. Paul, and I'm originally from Wisconsin, but I've lived in Minnesota for the last 10 years. And my favorite not boy band, well, I just did my Spotify year in review deal, you know, that everyone's doing and sharing. So apparently my favorite artist last year was Colter Wall. So kind of the outlaw country guy.
That's fair. Yeah. I heard Carf likes Colter Wall.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very elaborate.
That's all you got, Carf. This is the fun thing about having Carf on the podcast.
I like him. It's not fresh in my head right now. I've been listening to the Greatest Showman soundtrack, like nonstop.
Oh yes, dude, that's a good soundtrack.
Yeah.
I am unfamiliar. I guess I need to check that out.
Have you seen the movie? Because it's cold.
Just watch the movie.
So have you actually just been listening to the soundtrack or just watching the movie on repeat?
Both.
Like at the same simultaneously. No, you just mute time. The movie? No? All right.
No, I just don't watch it. Just let it play. And then I hear it and I know what's happening.
It's good.
And you sing through the whole thing.
Absolutely.
Do you want to give us any kind of preview of what that singing may or not sound like?
All right. Now, maybe in a little while.
Sounds good. Well, let's get into why do we have Chris and Mike on the show? Well, I wanted to talk to you guys because I don't know if you're listening and you follow Mike and Chris on Instagram or the Facebooks, mainly Instagram probably. They've had a kind of a hell of a year when it comes to muskie fly fishing. So talk to me, Chris, we'll start with you. Talk to me leading up to fall. What does your game plan look like? Are you scouting ahead of time or do you just kind of go with the flow and how the weather plays out? I'm not asking you to blow up spots, but you know, how far in advance are you biting your teeth to be able to get out there for that fall time muskie hunt?
So for starters, I don't plan that far ahead of, but as far as when I can fish, I don't get to fish a whole lot. So usually I pick my days. I'll look at the lunar calendars and, look at new moons, full moons. And those days I'll try to get off work. And if they're on the weekend, just make plans for that. But, you know, going into fall, I'm looking for bigger water, bigger fish, where they're going to be concentrated. So, but yeah, as I'm planning, I'm really looking at lunar phases and, trying to pick my days accordingly since I only get a few days out a year. So
he makes those few days count too.
Try to.
Yeah. Oh,
try to.
Speaking of that, why don't the two of you, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about one of those magical days that you had this fall.
Well, Chris had more magical days than I did. So I'll share the one that we just had. It was pretty epic. So, a couple weeks ago, so at the very end of November, Chris and I we fished together once this year, but we just hadn't gotten to fish together like we usually do. And we had a Saturday coming up that was above freezing, which was nice. So Chris hit me up and him, myself, and our buddy Landon went out fishing in Chris's towie. And we started out a section of river that we had never musky fished before. Not me, Landon, or Chris have ever musky fished it. I smallmouth bass fished it earlier in the year and kind of thought it might be a good spot to try later in the fall, but just didn't get around to it. So we went out with Chris and Landon and we started fishing. It was pretty cold. I think it was maybe so at 32, 33 degrees, Chris, in the morning.
Well, the air temperature wasn't the problem. It was the 20-mile-an-hour winds that was the problem.
Right. So, you know, as they say in musky fishing, sometimes the worse the weather, the better the fishing. So
right.
We bundled up. Embrace the suck. So we went out, probably fished about an hour, hour and a half without any action. And then we got to this bank and the water we were fishing is pretty big water. So there wasn't super obvious spots. You know, some of the smaller rivers, you'll see very obvious eddies or flack water. This was more kind of reading the bottom or reading the banks. And we got to this one bank, and Chris was in the front. And whenever Chris is fishing, you never know what's going to happen. I've seen him catch a 46-incher about a month before this. So he's in the front of the boat. I think I'm in the back. Landon's rolling. And all of a sudden, Chris just starts yelling, fish, fish, fish. And I look up in front of the boat, and sure enough, he's hooked up. The fish isn't too far. It probably ate, what, Chris? Maybe 10 feet off the boat?
You're closer than that. I mean, yeah. I'd say 5 feet even. I mean, it was close. It came all the way out.
Big fish. Landon gets it in the net, and, you know, we're just freaking out. And we roll the boat over to the shore, get out. We all have our waders on, and we get some measurements. And I think it was, what, 46 by 20? 20-inch girth?
46 by 22.
By 22. So it was just an absolute mega.
Jesus.
And, you know, so we got a few pictures, let it go. And at that point, we had actually motored up from the landing to start. So the landing was like a quarter mile downstream from where we had started. And we were like, well, maybe we should just go over to the landing and be done, right? You know, we fished for an hour and a half, got a 46. We're not going to get another one. You know, the landing's right there. It's cold. But of course, we're not going to do that. So we fished for one another 3 hours, kind of on and off. And we get to another bank that earlier in the year I had moved a really, really nice smallmouth off of. So it was kind of a deep bank. There was some structure in the water. And I'm in the front this time, and I'm fishing slow and deep, and all of a sudden.
No, you're in the back. You're in the back.
You're right. Yeah,
in the back.
Losing my mind. So I was in the back, and I got kind of stuck on what, you know, felt like a tree, right? So you get this dead weight, and I gave it a couple strips, and all of a sudden I just felt my rod tip start moving, and I realized, oh, there's a fish on the end of my line. So I'm stripping, I'm yelling fish, you know, doing what you do when you catch or hook up into a muskie, just kind of start freaking out. And this head comes up to the water, and it was, you know, I've caught a few nice fish, but this thing was a different class. I mean, this was a mega fish, and I probably fought it for, I don't know, 10 seconds. Like it was on, and I thought I had a pretty good chance of getting it. And then all of a sudden the fly just pops out, and like the fish is boat side. I drop to my knees. I put my hands over my head, and I'm just like sitting in the boat. You know, I've had this happen before, so it's not the first time I've had my heart broken by a muskie, but it hurt a little bit. So I'd say we start fishing again because the bank is good and we're still floating down the river. So I get back up, I start casting, and I'm like, there's no way that this is going to happen again. Like, I just lost my chance. And Chris can attest, it probably wasn't less than 5 minutes.
Less than 5 minutes.
Tops. And I'm doing the same thing, same bank. We're maybe 30 yards downriver. And the same scenario happens. You know, I'm stripping, fishing deep. And all of a sudden, just, you know, I feel my fly. And when you strip a musky fly, for those of you that have done it, you can feel with every strip, you feel the weight of the fly. Like, you can feel that fly on the end of your line. You know, so I'm stripping. And all of a sudden I strip, but I don't feel my fly. Like, it's like dead slack. So I kind of do a couple of quick strips to catch up to my fly. And all of a sudden I realize that there's weight on there again. So I, you know, give it a good strip set, and I realized, holy cow, I'm hooked up again. So I, you know, I'm yelling fish, and we're kind of freaking out. We get it in the net. And this was the first fish I had caught on this specific river. And I've been trying to get a fish on this river for a while. So I was, you know, pretty stoked to finally cross that off. And mine wasn't quite as big as Chris's. I think it was 46 or 43 by 17 or something. So another really nice fish. We let it go.
Fat and then fish.
Fat, yeah, these are all really, really healthy late
November fish, man. They're eating. Yeah,
pretty exciting. So then we look at Landon, and we're like, all right, Landon, pressure's on, man. Like, Chris has a fish, I have a fish. We need to complete the trifecta, because the joke was, up until the month before when Chris had caught the other 46 with me, we had fished together for muskies multiple times, but we'd never caught one. So it was like, there's this weird kind of stigma that whenever Chris and I fished together, we just never get the muskie. Well, now we each gotten one, and we're like, all right, we really need to have a banner day today. So Landon gets in the front. I'm on the oars now. And again, I'm not kidding you. Chris can attest. It wasn't 5 minutes.
Well, you got to back up a little bit. So before you hooked into the first big fish, I thought we graphed one above it.
Yep.
So then I thought we graphed one on my electronics. And then after Micah landed his, started up the motor and went back up, and started to fish the whole bank again.
Yep. So we worked the water. We just worked.
Got it.
Landon hadn't been fishing for five. I mean, he's, you know, him and I are just kind of talking back and forth, and all of a sudden he just stops talking. Like, he's mid sentence and just dead quiet.
Silent, the silent type when they hook into something.
Yep. And I'm looking at his fly line, and I just see it get taut. And I'm like, dude, is that a fish? And he, you know, sets the hook. Sure enough, he's got a fish on. Chris and I are just like, we can't believe this is happening. Like, this is three fish, you know, two fish in a matter of 15 minutes plus the one I had lost. So we get Landon's fish in, and, you know, we had completed the trifecta. We were pretty stoked. His was 40 inches by, I think, 16 or something, another really fat fish. Yep. And, you know, we got some pictures, let it go. And at that point, we were sitting on the bank just talking. We're like, this is insane. Like, we just caught a 46, a 43, and a 40. And, you know, it's still cold, windy. And we're like, all right, well, something's clearly going on here. We need to keep going. so we get back in the boat. We motor back up, and it's maybe a 200-yard section of bank. Landon's hands are cold because he was keeping the fish in the water, and it's freezing cold. So he's on the oars. I'm in the back. Chris is back in the front. And
no, I was in the back. Dude, it's important. Okay.
Chris is in the back again. He's correcting me on the spots of the boat.
I like to be in the back of the boat. So
that's right. Chris's thing is the back of the boat catches the fish, which other people have said too. So
I've seen that happen plenty of times.
Right. So we're fishing, we're floating kind of in the area where I had first lost that fish. But I had had it on long enough that, you know, I just kind of figured it probably wasn't coming back, but, you know, whatever. Well, Chris is in the back, and all of a sudden, and this is again, probably 10 minutes after Landon catches his fish, not a joke. And Chris hooks up and he starts yelling fish. And we realized this is the fish that I had lost. Like, this is the one we had seen. It was like, we had just caught a 43 and a 40, but this was different class. And we quickly realized this is the mega. So Landon's in the middle. He gets the net. Chris fights it for, it wasn't a super long fight, but it was a pretty good battle. And we get it in the net. And this time we didn't even really cheer that much. Like, we netted it and Chris just looked at us. And this is a quote. He goes, guys, this might be my 50. And we're like, oh my. So we go over to the shore, get the tape measure out, do all the measurements. And it was 50 right on the nose with a 23 inch girth, just this humongous fish. It's pretty special. Chris, you should talk about it.
Yeah. I just started screaming. I mean, it was weird because the bank that we were fishing was really steep, and we were floating in about 8 feet of water, and my fly hit the rocks on the bank or the sand or whatever we were fishing, and two strips, and I felt something heavy. If no one here has ever musky fished this late in the year, I mean, I haven't even, but later in the season, their strikes are very like lethargic. I mean, they pretty much put the fly in their mouth and sink to the bottom. They don't turn their head. It's really hard to hook fish this time of year because they don't give you that grab and turn the other way. And, you know, so if you feel anything this time of year, I mean, you just got to give her the hell and the strip sets. And my second strip, I felt something heavy and just gave it to her. And my second strip set, I think I pulled her head out of the water and just started screaming it. I mean, Mike has fished with me a handful of times now that when I catch muskie or when someone catches muskie, it doesn't matter the size. I scream like a little girl and I get really excited. So
that's the fun part.
Yeah. And, but yeah, so I hook up and, I don't know, came behind the boat, did a couple of slashes, and we got her in the net, and it was, I'm kind of shaking now just thinking about it. Cause it was just a wild moment.
So. The fish that haunts you in your dreams at night now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I seriously, like, before when I was waiting for you guys to let me in on this call, I was looking at musky photos because it's seriously like all I think about. I have a strong addiction to these fish right now. So
it was one of those fish where, like, we had just seen, you know, within the last 30 minutes, a 43 and a 40, which, you know, in any other sense are trophy fish.
Yeah.
But when we had his in the net, it was just a totally different class, you know, and once they get to that length, with every incremental inch of length, the weight is just insane. Right. So it's like, that fish was so heavy. The picture, one of the pictures that has been kind of circling of his fish, it's Chris in the water with both of his arms, just like basically hugging the muskie, you know, cause it's just so heavy that you can hardly even lift it out of the water.
Right. And when they get that fat, you know, they don't have anything to hold on to. So their fat just falls around in your hands. And, you know, I tried to hold it up and get the good grip and grin, and she fell back onto my chest. And that's where that photo kind of comes from. I'm just laughing that I can't even hold this stupid fish. And
right. That picture of him with his head back, just like laughing, that was 100% candid. That was not staged whatsoever. I was just taking pictures, and it was just funny how huge it was, you know? And for those of you who know Chris, he's not a big guy. So this muskie honestly is like, looks like the size of him in the picture.
No, I just Googled 50 inches in feet and it's 4'1". And you're totally far from 4'1".
I mean, it's close though, right?
Right. But well, I get a kick out of whenever I catch one of these fish, I bring it home and I send a, you know, show a photo to my kids, and I got a 9, 6, and 3-year-old. So I always compare them. Like when I'm showing them, I compare them to how big they are. So like the 50 inch, my oldest son is 55 inches tall and my middle son is like 45 inches tall. So I'm like, this is like catching you, man. Like,
yeah,
it's insane.
That's one way to get them to go swimming again in the water. Be like, hey, dad goes out and catches these fish the size of you all the time. Not a big deal.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. And the untold part of the story, so we sat on the bank for maybe 30 minutes after that and just talked. Like, we, none of us had any desire to fish. We're like, this, you know, the day was kind of winding down.
Micah finished his flask after that fish.
Yeah, it was, it was a good time. But then we were floating down the river. We were probably, I don't know, quarter mile down the river, just trying to get to the takeout. And we get to this bank that just looks so good. Just so good. So I'm like, man, I told myself I wasn't going to fish again, but man, this bank is way too good. Mm-hmm. And the untold part of the story is Landon actually had another fish on after that, but half a mile downriver. We never saw, but he was fighting it for maybe 10, 15 seconds and it popped, but we almost had a 5-fish day.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane.
On November 29th.
In
Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yep.
When guys were ice fishing this time last year.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I forgot to ask, is dad's root beer okay on brown trout and bridge beers?
Oh yeah. We don't discriminate against any type of beers. All beers are accepted. Because truth be told, I'm not even drinking hams. I'm drinking Labatt's. So, it's been weird. Water. That a boy. So I got to ask, because I'm curious and nobody else is curious. What was the fly of the day on your guys's crazy 11/29 day?
Well, I'll never catch two muskie on the same fly. When I catch a muskie on a fly, it goes on the wall. So my first, the 46th of the day, that first fish of the day was caught on like a, it was like a orange, yellow, and rust double Buford, about 15 inches long.
And Chris then, has big flies. He throws big flies.
Yeah, I don't mess around. I like 15's the minimum size this time of year. But then the second fish was on tried and trusted Black and Chart double Buford 15-inch fly. And that one, we were scared. When I was fighting her, we saw the tail of the fly hanging out of her gale plate. Mm-hmm. And so we got her in the net. And the first, I normally like to take pictures with the fly in the mouth. But the first thing we did is got the tools, got the jaw spreader, and cut my fly up and got the hook out of there. Luckily, she was hooked about as far back into her mouth, in the roof of her mouth, as it can be before it starts getting to the gills and the vital stuff. So we got lucky there.
That's good. So
we got the fly out, didn't leave anything in. It was good.
Yep. So I think my fish, last year I tied a lot of my own flies and they swam fine and we caught some nice fish, but I quickly realized musky flies, fly tying is not my expertise, and I have buddies that are way better than me. So I fished a few of Chris's flies. The one I caught mine on was actually my buddy David Holmes tied it for me. It was it was pink and white. For some reason, I like pink. I don't know. Just I've caught some fish on it. It looks fun to fish. It was a gliding fly, so it fished it really deep, not a Buford style, but a bucktail double fly, and just fishing it real slow and real deep. Has an articulated shank in it, so. And Landon's, I think his, I don't remember if his was on red or it was all different colors, to be honest. I think it was more about depth and kind of how we were presenting them and not as much color.
Yeah, I'm a big presentation. It's more, if you're into colors, it's more, I guess it's a color that gives you confidence. Yeah. I don't think muskie are too, I mean, if you look at their food supply, they eat yellow fish, they eat white fish, they eat, you know, red, brown. I mean, I don't know that they're, I've been actually told that muskie are more colorblind as far as how they're hunting versus pike, where they like flashy colors, where the muskie is obviously the more lateral line predator. So they're that movement when you pop that fly and you get it to push some good water, that's what's going to get them all activated and finding their food. So if you get a good fly that can move well and, you know, with tiny movements of your fly line and keep that fly out on the dance floor, especially this time of year, you know, they don't want to put up too much effort to get after their food. So if you can let it hang in front of their face and dance a little bit, they'll eat it.
I think at least one or two of the fish we caught had,
on them. Lampreys
on them.
Really? At least
they're hugging the bottom. Not moving much. So
how big was the
The first fish that we caught that I caught that day, I actually saw the lamprey on her belly when she splashed one time. I mean, it was probably a 6-8 inch lamprey, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But the one I just caught one yesterday, it's a fat 45 incher, and she had like we netted her, and the lamprey was still on her side.
So they're sitting low this time of year. The other thing too, Grant, I was going to call out a good opportunity for Micah and Chris' story is when you fish flies, make sure that if they're articulated.
Oh gosh, you have a
strong articulation. Who popped the fly in half? Here's a story. So last year, this goes back to the me and Chris fish somewhat frequently, and we just hadn't had any good luck muskie fishing together. Done plenty of trout trips, but last year it was late in the season. Not this late, but it was in November, and Chris and I had fished all day. Different river than the one we fished this last weekend, and we had moved some fish on the certain bank, and we just kind of like we did this last week, and we fished the same bank probably 10 times, right? We found kind of where they were located, and we just pounded it over and over. I mean, we didn't hardly move this from this specific maybe quarter mile all day. And it was getting dark, which this time of year is like 4 o'clock. And we're floating this section for the very last time of the day. We're like, this is it. Last chance. Chris is in the front. I'm rowing. And we get down to the very end of this kind of long, deep hole. And Chris hooks up. And we're like, this is awesome. Like, last few minutes of the day, we're going to net a muskie. It's going to be great. So Chris is battling. He's battling. And the muskie gets pretty close to the boat. I mean, I have the net in my hand. And all of a sudden, his rod just goes limp. And there's nothing there. And he's like, what happened? He strips his fly in. And the muskie you're using like a split ring.
No, I had a split ring to my back hook.
And it straightened it out. Just completely straightened his fly out and got away. And I think we sat in the boat and didn't talk for maybe 5 minutes and just floated and down just the river. Floated. We just kept floating. And I kind of was like, man, I don't even know what to say.
We're lucky that there was nothing to run into, because we would have just ran into it. Cause
it was
depressing. So pissed off.
I was ready
to break my rod and throw it in the water.
He was close. And then this winter, Chris was cleaning his boat out, and he sends me a picture, and he had found the split ring in the bottom of his boat when he was vacuuming it out, and he sent it to me. So we were finally glad to exercise those demons a couple weeks ago.
Yep. Felt good to get that monkey off the shoulders.
Got the skunk off the fishing duo.
Right. Yep.
You got to do that every now and then.
Yeah.
And we did it in a big way. I mean, to get the actual skunk off, we stuck it. Well, that was a grind of a day. That me, Micah, and our friend Drew were out. And this is in early October, maybe. It was when it got really cold. I mean, it was like low 20s when we started. And we fished all day. And Micah had one little follow. And then shortly after that, he stuck a stud pike. Like, if we had a bump board, we only had a soft tape. If we had a bump board, it would have been 40. But just that's a stud pike. It's a huge pike. And that was towards the end of the day. And we just keep fishing. We actually, since we hadn't had any luck there, we floated past our takeout point, and because we saw a spot that could possibly look good. And I go tight, and we get this fat 46. I mean, she was thick. And that was the fish that got our musky skunk off our backs. And then we go and have this four fish insane day. So we did it in a good fashion anyways.
So yeah, Chris has given me some chances to take some pictures of musky. So I always say I'm at least good for a picture if I'm with Chris.
I just get real lucky. That's really.
I was going to say, did you have to sell the soul of one of your children to have a fall this way?
You know, I got to give credit to a lot of the guys that, like Robert at Bob Mitchell Fly Shop. I've been fishing with Gabe a couple times this winter, and I've learned a lot from him. Guys like, Chris Willen, I've been able to fish with a few of these real good guys, Luke Swanson, and they've given me a lot of tips and everything. So I take what they put in, like just like anything in my life, I take what everyone's teaching me and I put my own twist on everything. But for the most part, I'm putting what they've paved for years. Luke's still newer than some of the guys, but Gabe, I think, has been fishing for these things since like the early 2000s, you know? And so listen to him talk about these things. He's telling me things that I'm like, oh, well, that never even crossed my mind, but I'll sure put a note on that one.
Yeah. If you could pick, like, let's call it two things from your general knowledge that you've learned from, let's call them the Midwest Muskie Guru crew. What would those two things be from all those guys that you would want to pass on to somebody who's saying, hey, I want to ruin my life and become a musky fly fisherman?
Go ahead, Micah.
Man, well,
are you talking directly to me? I guess I don't know what.
Question will be for both of you, but whoever wants to start that one off first.
Oh, sure.
I'll start. For kind of like Chris, I've only actually been doing this somewhat. Well, I've gone pretty hard now for about two and a half years. So I am by no means an expert. And Chris has been a little bit more, when he goes out, I feel like he has it dialed a little better. See, me, I've had some luck this year, but it's because I go out all the time. So I think what I do is I'm kind of a nerd. So this kind of answers your question along with me just rambling, Grant, but I keep a spreadsheet. And every single float I do, whether it's for smallmouth or muskie, I record it. I record water levels, temperature, date, how many miles we floated, where we floated, you know, any sort of like pattern I'm noticing. So I know for a fact that I've been in a boat muskie fishing for 210 hours this year. And for someone that has like a normal job, like during the week, that's a lot of muskie fishing. Yes. So I have caught a handful of really nice fish this year, but there's definitely way more days where I go and I don't catch something. So I'm still learning, you know, a ton, a lot to learn, but when you go out 210 times, something's going to happen eventually, I think. So that's part of my success story. And the other thing I think that I would recommend to people kind of getting into it is, you know, find a community of people that are into it as well. You know, part of the reason I have success is I have a lot of buddies. You know, Chris is obviously one of them. And then I have like a group chat with a bunch of other buddies that live in Wisconsin. And whenever anyone's going fishing, you know, they let us know how it was, if they saw fish, if they hooked fish. So when you have this group of guys that are all like super into it and you're kind of sharing knowledge or fishing together, you know, you really kind of cut the learning curve, I would say.
Yeah.
So that's been fun. And guys in different areas of the state, right? So I have buddies that maybe fish water I'm not used to or haven't been to before. And you can kind of learn the area, learn different rivers quicker that way. So I think having a community is a really good piece of advice I would give. And there's not a ton of guys that are super into it. I mean, we're by no means exclusive. There's a lot of guys into it when you know, there's maybe, I don't know, I don't want to put a number on it, but it's small enough is what I'm saying, is that if you do get really into it, you're going to find guys that are going to want to fish with you. So if this is something you're interested in and you get really into it, there's a lot of guys with boats that are looking to fill their three spots, and you know, you're going to find buddies that are going to, you know, want to spend all day torturing themselves on a river with you. That's one piece of advice. And I think the other one I would give for people that are kind of getting into it is water flows for me have been really, really big. And just tracking that, right? So a lot of the times this year, I would just go to spots I had never been to before, didn't know anything, and just floated them. And sometimes you'll strike gold and you'll catch fish. And sometimes you'll drop in and you'll float 5 miles of shin deep water and you don't see a fish. So really just knowing, okay, at this flow, I know this section is way too shallow, or this flow at this section is perfect. And when you start recording those and recording where you saw fish, when you saw fish, now if I want to fish for a weekend, what I might do is I'll go to USGS. For those of you that maybe haven't done that, they have a lot of gauges all over the country that show water CFS flows. So if I'm
Unfortunately, they're normally at dams, so that means that there's dams all over those rivers. But
yeah, that's true. But one positive is if I want to go fishing, I'll start just looking at flows of all the different sections I've fished. and bump it up against my notes to say, okay, I know at this specific spot, if it's flowing at 3000 CFS, the water is just perfect. Or if I notice that the flows have been super erratic, you know, really high, really low, not stable, you know, maybe I'll kind of stay away from that spot. Or that's just something that I've noticed. And that way you're going to eliminate a lot of water, specifically shallow water, kind of in the spring and summer times, that just isn't going to hold or is unlikely to hold. And you're not going to waste the whole day fishing water that, you know, likely doesn't have much in it at that time.
I think that's great advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely, I back up the notes thing. I did the notes a couple other, this is like my, I think this is my fourth season fishing for these fish. And for the first two or three of them, probably, well, the second and third years, I took notes. And then I didn't take them as in depth as Micah, but my notes were like moon phases, temperature, water temp, you know, which way the wind was coming out, how much wind, sunny, overcast, whatever. And the reason why I didn't do it this way this year is one, I didn't fish as much as I wanted to this year. And two, my notes were all like, when I moved fish, there was like cloudy, northwest wind, whatever temp, you know, moon phase was full moon or, and I was moving them during the, if it wasn't full moon or new moon, it was, I was moving them during the moon, the four moon phases of the day. So I kind of just took that and ran with it, I guess. But I definitely take notes because you can look back and like, you know, only doing it for 4 years, my notes don't really match up. But I mean, I imagine someone who's been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years, you're going to look back and be like, I was on this stretch of water, you know, this fish was here at this time of year, you know, yeah, really pay attention to that time of year. Water temp's huge. These fish are, they, everything, their lives depend on water temperature. So when the water temp goes up, they do this. When the water temp goes down, they do that. And you can really, that's, you narrowing water down by water temp is huge. 'Cause like, the first fish I caught this year was in August, I think. And it was in like 73 degrees of water and it was fairly fast moving water. The fish I caught yesterday was in 34 degrees of water. So, I mean, they're pretty predictable once you start breaking that down. The problem is they're such snobs that they can do whatever they want and eat whatever they want. So that what you have on your side this time of year is that they have to. Their metabolisms are speeding up. The big females are getting eggs and their metabolism needs that to build those eggs and, you know, to survive really in life. So it makes them a little bit more predictable, but again, it comes down to whether or not you're in the right place, right time, right fly, right presentation. So.
Well, I'd say, I think you guys figured that out over the last couple of months. I think that's probably pretty fair to say.
Or just got really lucky.
Yeah, probably. Really, yeah. You guys can, I mean, just tell us where the horseshoes and leprechauns are at right now.
I'm still waiting for the silver spoon to come out in the toilet, but.
I would say somebody's got the silver spoon, somebody's got the horseshoe stuck up somewhere that'll fall out when you're walking down the stream one of these days, maybe. Okay. The other question I'd like to ask too is, because everybody's, you know, just like targeting, you know, trout, everybody's got their own setups that they get into, especially when I start talking like streamers, right? So talk to me about your leader setups, specifically fall time, you know, let's river fall time leader setups. What do you guys like to do for, let's call it your 15 inch double Bufords?
So I'm fishing a heavy line this time of year. My personal favorite right this time of year is the Sonar Titan 357. Get you down quick, and then especially with the big flies, you got to have something to pull them down. But my leader setup, I got about, I'd say it's about 20 ish inches of 40 pound Maxima, and then goes to 50 pound. I know it's backwards. I got the 50 below the 40, but I like the thickness of the 50 pound Cortland toothy critter, about 12-ish, 15 inches of that. And then I do snaps. I've never had a snap fail on me. I know there's stories out there. I was with Micah actually when one opened up on him. So I do a snap. My 15 inch Bufords, it's basically 5-0 hooks, nothing smaller. My back hooks is B10S, and then probably a good 8-inch tail on it with feather, little bit of whatever wig hair, whatever that stuff is. I don't even know. And flash. And then it goes to a 40 millimeter shank with bucktail, straight tied, not reverse tied. And then to a 80 millimeter shank, half of it's tied. And then the other half gets tied onto a front, spinner bait hook, and then more bucktail, and then a Buford head. I mean, it's really simple, but there's a couple little tricks in there that I won't share, 'cause it's my little twist I put on the fly that's been trusted for years, you know? Yeah. So, but I got a couple twists that make it dance the way I want it to dance. And I'm pretty particular about my flies. And I know guys will cut stuff, you know, material off flies if they don't swim well and retie them. And if it doesn't swim well, I just throw it away. I don't care. I'd rather just start over. And I think it's bad juju in my opinion.
So what's your collection of flies that you deem not to standard? Like, do you just have walls of these or buckets?
Well, it's just flies? A pile. I have a pile of flies on a bookshelf, and I don't know. To get to the double that I fish right now, I'm on it's probably my third prototype, maybe fourth prototype. And each prototype had about 10 flies. So, I've wasted a lot of material and money and time, but I got a fly right now that I really, really like. So I'm kind of at the point where I'm going to just keep tying them this way.
So
is this correct?
What's that?
Do you see this?
I can't see it. You're not coming up.
I'm not coming up. Do you see?
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
That is the secret material. Yes.
Okay.
That is.
That's what I think.
So since this is an audio program, for those of you who couldn't see, Cliff is holding up the magic horseshoe that we all believe that's lodged up somewhere in Chris's body.
It's lodged in the middle of his flies.
Yes. So you mentioned you're kind of particular on materials. Is that why I've seen you've taken to tanning or taxiderming your own bucktails? Is that a new hobby that your family probably really enjoys?
Oh, they love it. My wife loves it. It's laying out in my laundry room right now and in the spare bedroom. I got tails drying in the laundry room, and ready tails are to be dyed are in my spare bedroom right now. That's a little bit of, I can be real particular, 'cause I know when guys are selling tails to shops, they're taking the best ones for themselves first, and then they'll sell the A-minus squad to the shop. And then I know for a fact that the shop is picking through what they want first straight away. So I'm getting, you know, a run of the mill stuff. So I talked to a few people and, found out their processes of it. So I went to a taxidermist and bought 60 some tails and, been tanning them there. I got about 50-ish of them are ready to die. And then a couple more still got to dry. So, but
now for Chris, 60 tails is about 30 flies. So
yeah. Yep.
All right. At that size. Yeah. You're actually probably saving money. Unlike most fly tires
definitely. You go to whatever Londer, Bob Mitchell. I mean, a good tail is 10, 12 bucks. So I paid 75 cents a tail from the taxidermist, and I got about 60 or so, $70 worth of dye. And then you got to buy some borax and soap and that kind of crap. But I mean, I got plenty of white tails right now that I can't screw up. So the white's ready to go. It's just if I screw up the dyeing process, but
just take the lower class ones, test those out to start
with. Oh yeah. I mean, it's a learning curve, man. It's a, I wouldn't say it's hard work. It's just tedious work. And I mean, I royally messed up the first three, like the whole top of the tail is gone. So, I mean, I got the best part of the tail, the bottom's still good, but
yeah.
So.
Well, Micah, how about you? What's your go-to for leader setups, you know, for the fall time?
Mine's not very much different than Chris. I think I have a couple feet of heavy Maxima, 40, 50 pound. And then I use, I think I have some wire that I got from Lund's, maybe 12 to 15 inches of wire tied to a snap, which I was a big snap guy. Chris had kind of mentioned it. The fish that I had caught with him a couple weeks ago, that 43, when we had got it in the net and popped the fly out, I had noticed that my snap had completely straightened. The whole thing was
wow.
So after that, I'm a little bit hesitant. I'll probably keep rolling with them because I'm lazy, but it might hurt me in the, I might lose a fish because of it. If I do, then I might switch, but the snaps are just nice because you can switch flies so quickly. So yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything too special about my setup. And I use heavy line too, like Chris said. I think.
Are you using the Stalock snaps?
To be honest, Carf, I don't even know.
It's the ones that have a circle on them.
Yep, that's what I'm using. Yep, yep, yep.
Yeah, even if those fail, I think they still like hold.
I mean, the fish made it to the net, so it did its job, I guess. But yeah, and then I just use heavy line, like Chris. I think I have Scientific Angler's musky line, 450 grain. Just get the fly down. Yeah.
I think that's from what I've been told, it's just a spinoff of that 357. I think it's got a little thicker running line or handling line.
The thicker running line is kind of nice, especially this time of year when your hands are so cold. I feel like when you strip your line through your fingers, it's easier to slice them. So I kind of like that thick line. Because your hands do get cold, and I can't fish with gloves. I was gonna
ask, you know, even though it's been mild, kind of warm.
It's been warm. You didn't even have to say that mildly.
That water's still cold. You know, that's the other thing. It's that battle of, okay, I want to keep stripping my line, but I don't know that my digits are going to squeeze that line when it comes down. That's what it always comes down to for me fishing the fall time. I'm like, if I have to strip set, I don't know that my fingers are going to clench on down on this hard enough right now, but I suppose adrenaline's just going to take over at that point, hopefully, and you'll get a good clamp on it.
When you're moving fish, you don't think about it. It's those days when you go 4 or 5 hours without seeing one, your hands are frozen. They kind of stink. You do notice though, on those days though, you almost offer to row more often, right? So your hands are freezing. Like, man, I'll row. No, I just started. No, seriously, I'll row. Whereas like in the summer when you're bass fishing, you kind of forget time and you fish for, you know, a while and your buddy's like, hey man, I want to fish. But in the musky fishing, you almost fight to row sometimes.
Yeah, there's definitely that where you want to row. If it's windy and your hands are wet, it's never a good recipe.
Well, really the most important question is, what's the go-to boat snack while musky fishing?
Oh, that without a doubt, it's the cookie dough balls that you can get at Quick Trip.
Oh, yes. Those little plastic containers of them. I saw.
Oh gosh. Today. So I really try. I've been doing a good job this year of not using single use plastics. I'm one of those, you know, people that are trying to save the world. But
one
musky
at a time.
Yeah, no, it's a staple. Like it's a joke kind of now with me and Micah and a couple other guys that I fish with, is like, if we're not moving fish, it's like, oh man, we got to get some cookie dough in us. That's why we're not moving fish. Cause it's so good. It's so good.
So do they have different flavors? Yeah, that's cookie dough?
That's my tip. That's my tip for anyone getting into musky fishing. You got it. Go to Quick Trip. It's in one of the little refrigerator islands. Get the, you know, they got regular cookie dough chocolate chip, and then they got, I think they got like a birthday cake or a sprinkle one or something like that.
That's what I saw today. I was like, that looks like a birthday cake cookie dough sitting in there. And I was like, I can't eat that right now. I'll crash.
Luckily I got metabolism still on my side, so I'll eat the crap out of that stuff.
Oh. Very fair. Well, that's pretty awesome. I don't know. Is there, you know, any other tips, tricks, funny stories? You guys fall out of the boat yet?
No, the only, you know, funny enough, the only time I've ever had anyone fall in a boat that I'm in was with Carf.
Me. And I was there too.
I was just thinking about that earlier. I was like, I fished with Micah and Chris before and I fell in the boat and I broke my rod.
Why am I not surprised?
I fall down and go boom was the best hashtag after that happened. I love that. That one is so much habitat.
And I know you guys are sitting there thinking, like, did we hit a tree or a rock or was someone on the oar? Is it no? Carf just fell.
Fell.
we were parked in the middle of the river. I think we were just having like a lunch break. We're on the.
Or we might have been exchanging who was rowing. That might have been what it was.
No, I think it was a lunch break. I don't know. And I think
that was like 2 years ago. I think so. I don't know.
I stood up, and then I just lost it. I don't know where. My center of gravity just was gone.
You didn't have enough cookie dough in your tummy.
Any cookie dough that day.
This was pre cookie dough.
Yes. Oh man. I didn't know the cookie dough juju yet.
That was a fun day.
Have you always had the cookie dough on you all fall?
Yes. This fall I had the cookie dough on me all fall.
Wow.
The cookie dough started last year, right, Micah?
It started the day when you lost that fish because your fly ripped in half.
Yeah. So really the beginning of the juju was really bad juju, but I guess we just kind of made it work.
You fixed it.
Yeah. Literally every fish I've caught this year. Well, minus the first fish I caught, I was solo and I was wade fishing.
That's a good story, Chris. You should tell that story, Chris.
Oh, the first fish. Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, I had cookie dough on every other fish, but other this one, but so the first fish I caught this year, I was bored one day and I was looking on, you know, Google Maps, like all anglers do, and look for holes and look for just being stupid. And I find this spot. It looks awesome on the map. And, whatever, it's like a bushwhack crazy climb down. It's like straight down to the river where you get to it. And I went there after work. So I'm in like my work boots and work clothes and whatever. And I get down there, I climb down this, I bushwhack my way down to the river. When you actually get to the river, it's like probably a 20-foot straight down cliff that you're standing on. And I look down and I see this big pool and I just see this monster just swimming in this, just holding still in this eddy off some really good current. And I start freaking out. Take a picture and I try to get down the river again. I'm in my work boots and I start walking in the water and I'm getting my jeans all wet and everything. I'm like, all right, I got to come back for this fish. So next day I bring my gear in my work truck, make sure that I don't have anything going on in the afternoon. I leave work early, park on the side of the road, go down there, whatever. I look and I don't see her, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I cross the river, go across. And the other side of the bank is very steep. So like in order to not be in the water, you have to be like climbing over trees and boulders and whatever. Well, I come up on her and she's about 10, 20 yards downriver from where she was before. So I'm lucky I didn't spook her because she's only like, I'm not even joking, 3 feet off the shore and she's in about 12 inches of water. Just holding in maybe mile, 2 miles an hour current next to, she's on the inside of an outside bend. And, so I see her and the only way to get a good cast at her, cause I got trees and bushes and everything behind me, is I climb out on this tree, dead tree that's hanging over the river and it's 5-ish feet hanging over the river. So I put one fly on, cast up above her, strip it down and she turns on it. I mean, so this is a 43 inch fish and seeing a 43 inch fish turn in current and come after a fly is insane.
Yeah.
She turns. She's right on my tail. I was fishing a small fly actually here as a single Buford, but I bring it and it's like I'm in a boat because I'm 5 feet over the water. So I start figure eighting and I made my figure eight wrong. I went towards the shore and I'm in my fly is in 12 inches of water. I scrape the bottom and it turns her off. Well, she goes literally swim right back up to right where she was. And I was thinking to myself, oh man, she didn't even get phased by that. Switch flies once or twice more, nothing. Throw off another fly, same spot, bring it down. She turns on it again. This time I bring my eight towards the river and just hammers me on the L turn and sends me out into the river. She's going down river. Well, there's a big tree to my left and I couldn't get off the tree to get her down to the shore to whatever. So I have to jump. I'd straight river runs through it. So I jump into the river and she's after this fish. And I don't have a net. I'm wade fishing. So I don't have a net. I'm out in probably, I'm short. I'm 5'2", but I'm in like chest deep water, I suppose, trying to get this 43 inch fish. I get her close to me and I tail her and I just start screaming in the middle of the river. I start bringing her to shore and I get her to shore to get all my, you know, tools to get her unhooked and whatever. She's still hooked. My rod's laying on the shore. She kicks loose and starts swimming down river and starts pulling my rod down river. Well, so I leave all my crap on the bank. I grab my rod and I chase after her again. Now I'm 50 yards down from where all my crap is. I get her again, have to, you know, I run up 10 yards, dunk her in the water, a couple seconds, run up 10 more yards, dunk her in the water, finally get back and get her unhooked, get a quick selfie with her and send her on her way. But straight Brad Pitt, that's Asian good. Brad Pitt, not as good looking.
That's debatable.
I wish I could have been up on the cliff watching, Chris.
Oh, man. Yeah. That would have been great. I hope to God someone
heard him when he caught him. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure I was squealing like a little girl. But yeah, it's fun catching fish by yourself, but it's also a bummer because a big part of this game, not just musky, but a big part of the game is, the high fives and the hell yeahs and everything else, you know, because I mean, Micah will tell you, I scream just as loud when anyone else in the boat catches one as I do. Like that day that we caught four fish, I was hoarse. I screamed so much that day. It was crazy. It doesn't matter the size. Like I fished with, if you know who Gabe Schubert is, he's like, he's musky Jesus. He knows, he's been doing this forever. I think I was in high school still when he was doing this. And I fished with him yesterday and he caught the first fish today. It was like all of 33, maybe, you know, that's even stretching the envelope there. But he caught it and I like jumped up and grabbed the net and I started to scream and I saw his reaction that he was like, oh, look at this stupid little thing. And I like had to like have a little moment with myself. I like had to tone myself down. I was like, oh, you know, it's just a little one. Okay. Don't start screaming, you know, don't look like an idiot in front of Gabe, but it's just, I can't help it. These fish are, it's a drug to me.
I think a perfect example of that, with Chris and Sam, when you're with your buddies, is my first fish of the year. It wasn't quite as epic as Chris's. But I was fishing a section of river with a bunch of buddies. So my buddy Drew, Bobby, Landon, and Alec, and we had two boats and we were floating down the river and we'd probably gone 3 or 4 hours. This is opening day of muskie fishing in northern Wisconsin. We'd probably gone, I don't know, 3-4 miles and didn't see a fish. And we're pounding banks. I'm in the front of the boat and I cast this bank and I give it two strips and the water just explodes. I mean, just this huge explosion. Fish follows up to the boat, turns away. And so, you know, what we did is we ended up rowing back up river, maybe 30 yards and anchoring and just sitting, having a sandwich, you know, probably waited for 15 minutes. And, my buddies, Landon and Alec were in the boat behind us and they had caught up because they were maybe a half mile behind. And we had told them that I just moved a fish off this bank and we're going to let it rest and just give it another shot, see what happens. So they anchored with us. We just hung out in the middle of the river for a while, just, you know, talking. And, I think it was, I think Drew was on the oars and, maybe Bobby was, doesn't matter. But anyway, so we pull up the anchor and we start floating back to the spot where I had just moved this fish. And, you know, I was hoping that maybe you would come back, but you can never expect it, right? Muskies are finicky. Right. You never really know what's going to happen. Part of me was excited and part of me was like, yeah, it's probably not going to happen.
Opening day, spring.
Opening day, spring, you know, and we were in the middle of the river. This wasn't like off of a tree. It was just kind of this random fish sitting on the bank. And I cast in and I maybe strip it twice and the water explodes again. This time the fish is on. And because my buddies had known that there was a fish there, Alec and Landon in the boat behind were filming. So I hook up and I, you know, this is clearly a pretty nice fish. and I'm fighting it, and you know, we're floating down the river chasing it, and Alec and Landon in the boat filming are just losing their minds. Like in this video, they're just screaming and yelling and following us in their boat, like filming the whole thing. It was pretty awesome. We got it in the net, and it was like Chris said, it's just like a total, you know, everyone's super stoked, and it was just it's fun to experience those moments with your buddies.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's definitely a team game all the time. I mean, Karf was with me when I caught my first one, and that was definitely a hoot and holler. Everybody's high five and screaming. Bobby Nacho is screaming in that video. Is still my favorite thing in the world. Yeah. Just giggling like a little girl.
I like Aaron's first fish.
Yep,
and that was fun. Same lake. That was. I still watch that video from. I'll go back to his Instagram or wherever it is, and I'll still watch that video just to see the hype on everybody. I mean, is it someone squealing? It might be Robert.
Well, I know Sherlock was squealing, and the weird part it was is I was shore fishing watching those guys.
Yeah, you took the video, right?
And I was like, something weird. Like all of a sudden I saw like Aaron laser focus. I was like, all right, I'm gonna hit record. And then, you know, within 2 seconds, the donkey show started and people are falling over the boat screaming. And
that video encapsulates musky fishing perfectly. I mean, you got three guys in a boat and one guy is 100% happy and the other two are 99.8% happy. And the only 0.2 is because you're not feeling the joy of that fish pulling on your own line. I mean, it's like no other fish. I mean, and like to go back 4 years, for me, I want to fish for anything with fly but trout. And Micah will tell you the same thing that I said that. And I can remember the turning point. It was a Bob Mitchell Fly Shop event at Lake Harriet. It was like whatever it was, bass and brats or something like that. And Joey was this dude, Joey from town here, was fishing a huge musky fly off the dock on Lake Harriet. And he wasn't even fishing it hard. He was just throwing it. And we're BSing. I don't even have a rod in my hand. And he has this 40 something inch fish follow in to the eight and just disappear. And I saw the whole thing. And the next day, and Michael will tell you the same thing. I'm not a rich person, but when it comes to the stuff that I get into, money is not a factor. So the next day I went and bought 2 musky rods, 2 reels, lines, everything I needed to tie musky flies. And I started that day. And it's been a weird roller coaster ride ever since. And now, I mean, I still have those 2 rods, but I've recently got a couple of Chippewa River custom rods that are like my go-to this year. Guy makes some, he spins up some cool rods, and it's the rod is one thing, but the guy behind him is the best part about it. And Micah Fish is one of his rods too. You can't get better service. I mean, he does what you want. He's very hospitable. I mean, everything. Great guy. I can't give him enough plugs.
I met him at Treelands last year. And I know that Eau Claire crew, they all throw his rods too. And they nothing but good things and to say about him. But yeah, super nice guy. And his customer service, I think, is unmatchable. I think.
Yeah, that's what sells the rods. I mean, there probably is a better rod out there, to be honest with you. I mean, really, but I really haven't fished one that I care for any more than that one. And when he's behind it, I don't mind giving him my money. You know, like it's one of those things where it's worth it. You know,
well, and the price point on that rod, I mean,
oh, it's great.
I'll take that all day long.
Right.
When you're used to paying like Sage X or Sage One or Winston prices, I'm like, I'll buy 3 of those rods, you know, for that price.
I bought 2.
Exactly.
Anyone that knows Chris, he doesn't do anything he wants to do. He does not go halfway. He goes all in. So
yeah, it's so I don't drink and I don't do drugs for multiple reasons, but a big one is that I have a super addictive personality, and anyone, my friends or my wife for sure will be able to tell you that I don't do anything halfway when it comes to my hobbies. It's all or nothing. And I mean, in the 4 years of musky fishing, the first two, I got thousands of, I bought a boat. I mean, I bought, you know, it's like,
and it's a nice boat too.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, I bought two, but I got, now I have that canoe drifter, which is awesome. Yep. So, yeah, no, it's something that, I mean, you can go as hard as you want. You can spend a lot of money or you can get cheap stuff and do the same thing. It's just what you're comfortable with, but it's, I can tell you it's turned me into something else when it comes to fishing. I don't really think about fishing any other way than when it, if I got an opportunity to go catch, I love fishing for smallmouth. Don't get me wrong, but you give me a 30 smallmouth day versus a 3 follow musky day, I'm probably going to take the 3 follow musky day.
What about the topic? Oh, go ahead, Grant.
Ask. I was just to say, what about if you throw in, because I knew you used to be a brown trout nut. What if you throw in, you know, there's a pool where there's a 26 inch driftless brown hanging out.
Oh, well, so I definitely still like fishing for brown trout and I have a couple big ones on my plate.
Not literally, guys. Don't freak out.
No. Yeah, hey. Definitely. I know the 27 incher definitely got caught like 3 times after I caught it. So I handled it well enough. That fish is like famous around here.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
So you're saying a 26 inch brown versus a 3 follow musky day.
Yeah. And you know, the pool that brown's sitting in.
Oof. Come on. Where are we? Where is the brown trout pool? Is it in the driftless or is it in Montana?
Driftless.
Oh, who am I fishing with?
Carf.
For both of them or?
For both.
For both?
Yep.
For both. Well, I got to go with, I'm going to go with musky because I've caught trout with carf before.
Yeah.
And we've never even musky fished together. We've tried, but it didn't
talk work. About it.
Yeah. Fair we enough. Actually had a date planned and then I my family stuff came up, so I couldn't go and I had to go on a different day.
It's funny you mentioned that, that brown trout that got caught, was it 2 times after you caught it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like at least, day that we went out fishing in the driftless when we were on the way back to your house, that's when you saw like, you got a caught again. Yeah,
that was, that's right. That was like 1.5, 2 years after I caught it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. That was last year.
Last May.
Yeah, so and I caught that
May 2019. Yeah.
Yeah, cuz I caught that fish in January of 2017.
I hope it made it through the floods last year.
Yeah, well, that fish was an old fish. I don't know if it might have been dead by then.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, it had like leathery skin.
Yeah. Mike, you were going to say something before I rudely cut you off?
No, I think I was cutting you off. I don't remember, to be honest. But what I was going to say is there's a few fish that I personally haven't caught, but very distinctly remember seeing pictures of, you know, when you're like scrolling through Instagram or whatever. And that 27 inch brown Chris caught was one of them, where I was probably like laying in bed or something, looking at my phone. And I was like, what is this? Just a jaw on that thing.
Just a dinosaur. Just yeah. Crazy.
That one,
what's that?
That 28 you caught mousing. That was another one I very distinctly remember seeing a picture of.
Yeah, that. So I had no business catching either of those fish, but
Chris has always had unicorn or horseshoe, just in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah, I'm. It's just, I don't know. Maybe, well, Carf, you're Filipino, you know.
Yeah, it's
just, it just part
it's
of the
just
genetic?
How it is, you know.
We have this magical aura about us.
Yes. Well, yeah. Speaking of catching muskies, Carf, talk about the muskie that you caught the day that I caught mine up in Canada. Tell that story.
This story's stupid. This shouldn't happen.
No.
So we had just got back. Grant caught his muskie, and then we were going back to get breakfast and to rotate who goes out in the boat to go fish for muskie. and ate breakfast. Everyone was chilling. Then everyone left. And then I had a goal. I hadn't caught a walleye before, and I wanted to contribute to the end of the week fish fry up there. And so I was fishing a little Mr. Twister on a jig, my spin rod, off one of the piers all by myself. No one's around.
Sherlock was chopping wood.
Yeah, I was going to get there.
That's the best part of the story.
I was going to get there. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm like just jigging. I cast, and I just remember like jigging, staring. I was staring at this leaf in this super clear water. I'm like staring, there's all these boulders underneath, and I'm staring at this leaf float by. And out of nowhere, this muskie comes up and like looks like it's going to eat the leaf. And then it turns its head and it like takes a breath of air. I could have hit it with the rod, the tip of the rod. And I was just like, holy shit. I'm like, what? And then like I dropped the rod and I bolted to the back of the island, hoping that like my rod was still back there, like rigged up, or a muskie rod of some sort. And on my way back there, I got Sherlock. I crossed him in this little patch of forest, and I was like, Sherlock, I just saw a muskie. And he's like chopping wood and the flannel and everything. And it's summer. And he's like, I believe you. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna go get my rod. And then I run back and I'm on the pier. I don't see anything. And like, I just make a cast to where I know I was going to be crossing over past all these boulders, and made this cast. Couple strips, and this muskie just shot out from behind one of them and just crushed the fly. And I strip set, and then I was like, Sherlock. Then he comes running, and I was like, go get the net. And then he runs to the back. I'm fighting this thing, and it was hot. And he comes back, he goes, there's no net. And I'm like, okay, so what do we do? And yeah, I just ended up fighting it for a little bit, and then Sherlock tails it up onto the dock. We got it close enough, and he just grabs the tail and he just pulls this thing up. And we're just sitting on the pier, just laughing.
Total ninja style. Like when Total we came,
it was a nice fish too, Carp, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 40. I've never broke 40. I have 239s on my belt and a bunch of other smaller.
You know what? So I respect 39s though, because if you say you caught a 39, it was a legit 39. You know.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you weren't BSing that one.
Same with like a 19-inch brown trout. I respect that because I know you caught a 19-inch, which is a great fish.
Yeah. Great fish, but very frustrating when you continually catch them at 19. And you can't seem, to whatever reason, break that 20 mark.
Smallmouth are the same way.
That sounds like experience speaking right there.
Year after year. I don't know. Maybe I always say, maybe next year it'll happen. I also need to fish more, but we'll try and fix that 2021.
Right.
Oh, this was a weird year for fishing. It's hard to, it was hard to get out. I don't think I fished with someone this year until my second muskie day, which was mid September. Sometime I didn't fish with anybody until then. So that it was just weird.
Yeah, it is a weird year. Like Ted and I went and floated the Flambeau in June, but that was really the only like fishing trip, you know, that I went out and did this year, just because of how weird things is and travel and seeing other people and riding the same car is all this taboo stuff that you're not really supposed to do right now.
Right.
But well, I want to thank you guys for sitting down and chatting with us. Is there any final words of advice, Carf?
No, I didn't finish that story. That muskie story. It got better because we took pictures of the fish. Then when I after released it, I went and took a nap on the back dock where they would be returning in the boat.
That's what it was.
I was passed out. I was sleeping. I was taking an afternoon nap.
Passed out. Sleeping, meaning
I was waiting for them to come back.
Well, I thought you had too many adult beverages.
No. We were up early and they got back and I was like, how'd you guys do? They're like, oh, Dave Rosine moved one. And then that was it. And then I was like, oh yeah, I cleaned up that perch I caught. I was like, look at these pictures. And I was like showing the pictures of the perch and I passed by the muskie and they're like, wait, wait, what? And I was like, yeah, I caught a muskie while you guys are gone.
So you got to do a slow reveal twice in one morning, essentially, with fish. Because we played that game with Aaron when we got back after I caught that one that morning, too. He's like, why are you guys' pants wet? We're like, oh, the boat got blown up into the rocks. Yeah, it was windy, and we had to move the boat away from the island. But
that was your first fish, right? Right, Grant?
Yeah, that was
that's first a stud one. First fish, man.
Yeah, that one kind of ruins you. But dude. I'm like, eh, it's Canada, right? It's like fake fish. But, you know, they're kind of every, they just sprinkle them all over like grass seed up there. They're pretty, but no, that was a fun experience. And again, like, you know, we were talking earlier, having Bobby and Carf in the boat made it that much more fun just because we're all freaking out and having a good time. Severely hungover from going to bed about 4 o'clock that morning. But I think we made it through pretty decent.
That was a fun night. We tried, I think I have pictures and video of Grant trying to give beer to a crayfish.
I did. Yeah, I was trying. He was thirsty. He looked very thirsty. He needed beer. But yeah. If you guys don't have any final words of advice, thank you for hanging out with us. You know, I don't know if there's any more nice days coming, but if you go out, you'll probably catch a fish. So yeah, hopefully you guys can go out and do that again and just tell us about it. It'll be fun to see. As always, Brown Trout and Bridge Beers. Like us, share us, buy stickers, can koozies, check out Carf, check out these guys. I'll put their links and stuff. Don't check out Carf. Never mind. I'll put everything in the show notes. But yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it. And hope everybody's enjoying. It's probably 2021 now. We're past 2020. Hopefully you had a good Christmas and New Year's, and we will. And it's opening trout season probably right now. Yep. So hooray. Go find that 26-inch brown sitting in the pool somewhere. Later, guys.
Buy your friends hot dogs.
And hot dogs.